Excelsior, Spider-Man fans, and welcome to a brand new spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Prom Tom Mattis, and of course, I am always joined by my PIC, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how you doing tonight?
What's up?
Tonight, we will be covering episode 12 of the series, entitled Innovation. Or intervention. Excuse me. You know, again, I'm that whole Southern thing. I will continue to use that excuse until the day I die, because it makes sense. But we have no iTunes reviews or emails, but we do have a couple things to discuss. By the time you will be getting this email, which should be in early August, the Greg Wiseman interview should be out, and so you should have heard it. So, there, you know, we want to thank him for the time he gave us. You know, we're sure he's extremely busy with all his work that he's doing, and you know, there's some very, and we learned a lot of interesting things from that interview, didn't we, Don?
Oh yeah, we seriously did. I was legitimately surprised how forthcoming he was. It was great.
Yeah, and some people might say, oh, Tom, you finally got a definitive answer on the future of Spectacular Spider-Man. Well, he said, you know, he said something very interesting. He said it's wishful thinking. And you know what? He's right. It is. But I'm going to keep on wishing. Because to be honest, though, the reason is there's a lot of stuff that does not make sense in the announcement that goes on. And what it seems to me, based off some of the things he said, that it sounds like part of the reason they went with Ultimate Spider-Man and they haven't announced certain things is that because Sony has something that they need to continue the series. It makes sense that they wouldn't do two series at once, but at the same time, it's like I brought up, it doesn't seem like it's going to be your typical series. It seems like it's going to be a strictly team-up, non-linear story type of series, kind of like Superhero Squad. Again, this is wishful thinking, but you know, I can almost believe that at some point, as soon as Disney's willing to pony up the money, probably to Sony, that they might get that thing, and we might see a new season of Spectacular Spider-Man. Now, might it have Greg Wiseman? I mean, God forbid it doesn't. But you know, at the same time, there have been series that have restarted without, you know, with new directors and new cast and new stuff. So, I mean, we definitely want them to have the original cast. We definitely want them to have Greg Wiseman and Victor Cook and all, if they can, the original cast. But it's, you know, certain things. So, it's just that I can't see something as popular as Spectacular Spider-Man never coming back in some form, whether that be in animation, in a comic book, in some format or another. And
radio show.
Yeah. I mean, and like you said, it's wishful thinking. Yeah, it is. I'll agree with that, but I don't think it's unrealistic.
Well, I mean, you do have shows like Futurama and Family Guy who've come back from the brink, so
I mean,
like, if nothing else, it's not like such situations have not happened before.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's all I'll say.
Family Guy came back, Futurama gone for, like, what, 3-4 years between new episodes?
I don't remember.
You didn't pay him that much attention to Futurama. You just knew that it had a hiatus before Comedy Central.
No, I like Futurama. I have the DVDs for Futurama. I just don't remember the time span between last airing and the episodes on Comedy Central right now.
Okay. So, we covered that. The other thing we want to cover before we start the episode, we're getting an incoming news report. We have a correction to make. We said earlier that we don't have an iTunes review, but we actually do. Donovan forgot one, and it actually does pertain to what we were just about to talk about. So if you'll read that iTunes review, Don?
Yeah, silly me. By Jimbo Ritter, done in June 26th, titled Amazing, Spectacular, Ultimate, I don't know what that means, and just awesome. He gave us 5 out of 5 stars. This is the best podcast ever, but where is episode 1, Survival of the Fittest? Keep up the good work. And I also want to know who would win the fight, Spectacular Spider-Man or Spider-Man from 1994? Awesome.
Spectacular Spider-Man, because Spider-Man from 94 would just whine too much, saying, Mary Jane! But as far as episode 1, because we're on, again, like I said, it was going to pertain what we're about to talk about. Being that we're poor people and we're on Podomatic, we can't go beyond the free account. So we're basically going to be starting up a new Podomatic free account. We're basically going to be calling it the Spectacular Web's Archives. And we're going to be uploading past episodes to that. We're probably, by the upload of this episode, have 2, 3, and possibly 4 down. So, by the time this episode's released, though, it should be up, and you should be able to access the archives. So that's where you guys will be able to access past episodes of the show. And really, that's all it is to
well,
it.
Well, we should also say that, we do have the episodes up on the Spider-Man Crawl Space, and if you look under either my name, Donovan Grant, or Spectacular Spider-Man, you should be able to find the original initial episodes.
Yeah, but will they still play?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't think they'll play because you're taking it directly from Podomatic, aren't you?
I don't know. That's a good point.
Well, somebody can tell us if it did or whatever. But but basically, hopefully by then those will be up, and we'll have everything fixed. So, let's go right into the recap of the episode, which again, Don has.
Oh, I've been waiting for this for a long time.
Yeah, trust me. Don, this is the episode Don will Hulk out. So, strap yourself in. Please keep all hands inside the vehicle at all times. Go ahead, Don.
Okay. This episode is episode number 12, titled Intervention. Basically, the enemy is the symbiote itself. So, we start off with a black-shirted Peter Parker arriving at the hospital where his Aunt May is being held. Previously, she had a heart attack.
Can I deny my dark tones of the arc comment now?
Well, let's wait until the analysis. as he gets there, he runs into Eddie Brock, who just basically gives him another verbal lashing. He says, you don't care about anybody, so no wonder you got here so late. And Peter kind of lets that go for now. He immediately learns that the hospital bill will cost him a lot of money, so he's pretty sullen and depressed. And he shows up to school, all the girls and Kong in the background, Liz, Gwen, Mary Jane, they all show up and say, what can we do to help? And Peter
cough there. Allergies, sorry.
It's not Tenchi. as I say, Peter is basically, despite this harem showing up to ask what they can do to help, Peter's like kind of just yells at them and says, yeah, right, what can you do to help? Do you have any idea what the situation really, how important this is or whatever? So as he's doing this, it's worth noting that Flash is looking at him, looking very stern and upset. Peter swings off in his Spider-Man guise and wonders, they can't help, but I know who can. So he goes to Tombstone and says, is that job offer still up for grabs? Tombstone decrees that he must not fight any normal criminals for, a week? I forgot the timeline. For a certain amount of time. And, if he can do that, then he'll be worth Tombstone's employ. So Spider-Man says, no problem, deal. As he goes back to visit Aunt May, he runs into, I should mention, I'm sorry. Because of the symbiote being stolen and the grant being rescinded from Dr. Connors and his wife, they were counting on that grant to kind of help them with their funds, and because of that, they didn't go through, and they had to let go of Eddie Brock. So he's out of a job, and because of that, he's not able to pay for college. So while Peter is going back to Aunt May's room again, Eddie jumps him and says, yo, bro, you lost me my job. And Peter rightfully like just shoves him on the wall and says, shut up. We are sick of this. So, Brock verbally and physically owned this.
Which, can somebody please fire that dang security officer? Because I really, really wanted to see Peter put his fist down Eddie's throat.
That would be quite awesome, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it would.
Well,
Well, I'm going to do my Eddie Brock impression. Wine, 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 wine.
You do that so well.
Yes, I learned it from Cirque Fury.
Oh, ho, ho. And see if that's bleeped out or not, folks. okay, as Peter goes in the hospital, Gwen is calling him. He says, Gwen's just trying to yell at me again. And then he runs into Flash. He says, you fool. You don't even know that your friend's just trying to help. What kind of stuck up the geek are you? This kind of gets to Peter. He's swinging around thinking of all the choices he's made lately.
Wait. Flash made sense?
Soccer to blue!
I'm scared now. I'll be under the couch if anybody needs me.
And while Thomas is under the couch, we go back to Peter Parker swinging at Spider-Man saying, why have I turned down Gwen? Why have I accepted Tombstone's job offer? Why have we took up Tombstone's job offer? Why are we calling ourselves we? And amazingly, Peter Parker figures out exactly what's going on with the symbiote, and just happens to swing by a cathedral. He says, yeah, can you smell the sarcasm?
Yeah.
he says,
smells like chicken.
You're evil, huh?
It smells like chicken.
Chicken. So he says, hey, you're evil, and I want you gone now. So he runs into the bell tower of the cathedral, realizes immediately that the symbiote is not prone to noise, but the symbiote takes matters in his own hands. It kind of swallows him up in this sort of symbiote-esque web cocoon.
Oddly enough, the Simonite likes to act like a Sam Raimi movie.
As Peter, the next thing we see is a black and white scenery. Peter looks visibly younger, and he wakes up to Uncle Ben. Who knows? Yeah, he's basically reliving the day that he got his spider powers. So we see Peter going to the science exhibit. Oh, I mean the field trip, and go through the motions. And as Martha Connors is giving her display on superpowered engineer spiders, one is missing, and that one just happens to bite Peter Parker. Peter, we see. I mean, really, if you know who Spider-Man is, you know how he got his powers. We see him discover that he can crawl on walls. He has super strength, and we cut to him in costume at the venue. You know, taking up $1,000 to take on Crusher Hogan. Peter wins. Guy doesn't give him his money. Peter's annoyed. Burglar walks by. Peter lets him by. You know, not his problem. Guy gets away. Uncle Ben gets shot. Peter follows him down to a warehouse, realizes that burglar is the same person who he let go at the venue. And at that point, the symbiote says, you know, this is your life now. You need me, otherwise the world is going to continue to dump on you. So as the symbiote begins to absorb Peter, we see Uncle Ben coming out of nowhere to say, no, this is what's really going on. Then we are cut back to the famous great power, great responsibility phrase. And as symbiote saying, that's not gotten us anywhere. We have no friends, no money, no real life, no good job. And Uncle Ben's like, actually, he kind of does. And then we see a flashing montage of all his friends, all the people that Peter's helped. We also see that Peter has learned, because of great power, great responsibility, he's decided not to kill and just let the guy go to the authorities. Very mature of him. Basically, Peter takes all this encouragement to take on the symbiote by himself, in his own mind-ish. And he eventually defeats the symbiote. When he gets back to reality, he makes sure that the symbiote is off his person through the noise of the bell and goes back to the Connors lab to put it in a freezer, for lack of a better term. At the same time, Eddie was there to clean out his locker and sees that Spider-Man has destroyed the symbiote. This sends Eddie into a rage, which the symbiote feeds off of, and the symbiote, letting Eddie know who Spider-Man is, absorbs and completely bonds with Eddie Brock, then becoming Venom. And that is that episode.
You know what the only thing missing from this episode was? Mm-hmm. An emo Peter Parker dancing. But no, we'll get to that in about 5 minutes, because we have to talk about music. But trust me, it's the first thing to talk about when we talk about animation. Just wait. So, really, the only thing about music to talk about is the dream sequence, which is basically what we're labeling the dream sequence is Peter Parker being absorbed into the cocoon and then when he breaks out. So, I mean, what did you think of the music during that whole time?
In one of the few instances where I did notice the music, it was like when we got back to the commercial after you see, oh no, Uncle Ben. It's really actually kind of cool. There's like a soft piano playing in the background to kind of note that this is not reality.
Yeah,
and I thought it was pretty well done.
Yeah, and also I found the music during the when he gets bit and it goes, I love Spider-Man 1. Of course, I'm getting ahead of myself into the DNA. I found that music pretty cool. So I mean, and you know what? There were times where there was no music and they used silenced, and I found that those parts were perfect too.
My notes on this episode are not for the music.
Just to see if I can make Don a little madder, we're actually going to hold off on that point just for one more second, because I want to ask, how cool was it to basically have J. Jonah Jameson from the 94 series voicing Uncle Ben and Ed Asner, and you also had Jim Cummings as Crusher Hogan?
That was actually very cool. I'll go even further and say that this is not a Spider-Man reference, but the guy who voiced... His name is Sullivan Edwards, which is a turnaround of Edward Sullivan, which is a reference in the original Amazing Spider-Man or Amazing Fantasy 15. But that guy was voiced by Robert Costanza, who voiced Harvey Bullock in the Batman the Animated Series. But yeah, no, Ed Asner as Uncle Ben was very inspired. I thought he did a really good job. He was really slow, but not in a bad way. He was an older person.
Yeah,
he was very warm, and he really did a good performance. And it was a nice. It was just good casting choice. It wasn't like a total Easter egg. It was really nice casting.
Yeah. And Jim Cummings always does a good job, as anybody who's ever watched The Princess and the Frog can attest to.
And Winnie the Pooh.
And Winnie the Pooh, yes.
And the 90s Spider-Man show with the Shocker.
And all the Miyazaki movies.
That I've never seen.
Boo on you. Boo, boo, boo. But let's get to what Donovan's been, I'm sure, chomping at the bit.
Speaking of boos.
Yeah. Don's been chomping at the bits, to talk about this. Our first point with animation, which in my notes I have entitled Movie References, and More Movie References.
Right. Let's talk about this real quick.
Real quick.
This episode will be coming out right after our Greg Weisman review, because the guy gave us an hour and a half of good insight, and this episode he wrote, and I'm basically getting ready to crap all over it. spoilers in the next 20 minutes.
I'd like to point out, it's Don who's crapping all over it, not me. Remember that.
Yeah, well, I'll see if I can change your mind. Okay, movie reference one. You have basically, it's not a science expo. It's a field trip. Now, I will admit, since that was done in Ultimate Spider-Man, and this is, 2010, I don't really mind him being going to a field trip. What I do mind is the exact same lines repeated verbatim by the characters. And they really need to do that. Oh, 14 or 15 super spiders. Oh, there's only 14. Huh, what do you know? And the scene with him and Uncle Ben in the car.
Yeah.
For God's sake, are you... I'm sorry, Greg Weisman, you're a very good writer, but that was just lazy. I'm sorry, it was. I think he's actually said this on the interview that he kind of went too far, but it really was, like, taking the movie stuff verbatim and putting it into the cartoon. You might as well just call this the same continuity, if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And then you have, I'm not going to give you the money. Oh, well, I'm not going to, like, the guy go. And you have... stealing his car. I'm not saying that in the movie it was bad, but it's the fact that it was in the movie that's why I hate it.
What you're saying, it's not that the movie stuff was bad. The movie stuff all was good. It's just that it's copying. It's not doing anything unique to make the animated series stand out from the movie. I mean, there's taken references, because trust me, we've seen this series take references from the movies, from the Ultimate series, and the Stanley, Steve Ditko / John Romita Sr. era, barbatim. But, it's almost word for word everything that's done in the first movie and the third movie, as we'll get to in a second.
Seriously, exactly. There's no person on earth who can convince me that taking the exact dialogue was a good idea. Because it really cheapens the story. Spider-Man's origin, I think, is like the best origin in comics. So when you just copy and paste the dialogue from Sam Raimi and I think Ted Raimi helped him write it, whatever. That it's just, I hate that so much. It just,
I mean, now, I even say, I notice it and have problems with it. So you're not alone.
Well, I will say that at least they had like the whole him dodging a car and crushing a steel pipe in his hand. That was from the original comics. But that's like the only thing, besides the obvious, you know, catching the burglar story. But like everything else is just so much of the movies that I had drowned in the film strip.
What was the first, like when he got to found the cathedral and banged against the bell and the vent and the symbol did the whole.
That's just stupid on its own. Not because that was from the movies, because that's the comics. I mean, the 90s show did that. That was from the comics, but. Here's my thing about that. He just happens to find a cathedral without knowing until his thing that the symbiote is has a problem against sounds. Like he just happens to do that. Like in every other time he did that, it made more sense. Like even in Spider-Man 3, he was on a cathedral, you know, emoting, and then decided to go inside and just try to take it off. This one is a cathedral because that's how it always is. There's no reason for it. And then Peter immediately is like, oh, the sound, you don't like it. I mean, I know Peter's a smart guy, but everything just fell into place so badly. Oh, movie reference check 2099. Of course, when the thing hits him, it does a gigantic symbiote venom face at the exact same shot that it did from Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 3. That's another one. That's just weird.
But that's what I was talking about. When he hit the bell, the venom face happened.
Oh, that. Yeah.
That's what
it makes you want to kill yourself. God.
Well, I don't know about that.
But
I'm sorry. It's not making me want to put a gun barrel in my mouth, but I mean, I think we both actually like Spider-Man 3.
But that's not the point. The point is that this episode, which is supposed to be like a really dark, self-reflective episode, spends 75% of the time ripping off from another source material. And I'm not talking about, like, the comics. I'm talking about the show, because taking exact dialogue from the movie is ripping off.
And you know what? It doesn't make it dark. It actually makes it funny, because, personally, I was laughing. So you had these, as the sound of the bell rings, but as, you know, basically, as I'm watching this, I'm supposed to be feeling this dark episode, and instead, I'm laughing my ass off.
Well, that doesn't sound like it's a good thing. I mean, like you said, this is supposed to be a dark episode. I spent the majority.
But that's my point. That's my point is that you have this dark episode, and because of all the movie references, I'm laughing. So that's a bet.
Why are you laughing? Because you know I was like running.
I'm finding it funny. I'm like movie reference number one, number two. By the end of the episode, I'm like movie reference 365.
But it's like. Who gives a damn? It's supposed to be like saying on its own, like it's like you said.
Yes, yeah, I mean,
add things from different source material. Don't just take things from different source material and put it in there. Subtracting.
Don, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm agreeing with you. It's a bad thing. I'm just trying to say why it's a bad thing. Because instead of me feeling this serious episode, I'm laughing at it, which I shouldn't be doing.
You're exactly right. It's not a good thing.
But that's not that.
It doesn't end there.
Oh no, it doesn't. But you're almost hulked out. We need to save some of that for a little bit later. Let's talk about the dark tones of the episode, because there were a lot of dark tones in this episode.
What do you do? Yeah, it's symbiote black suit.
My
uncle's dead. Blah blah blah. Yeah. I mean, when you're revealing his revenge for the first time, it's not going to be a happy episode. But and like we said before, like the whole black and white aspect was kind of cool, especially with like the design symbiote matching their flashback.
Well, when I'm saying color tones, yeah, I'm talking about the colors. There was a lot of black in this episode. There was a lot of dark colors in this episode. The only light colors were the white and brilliant scene between Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy.
Well, I mean, I think that if you're going to talk about color, the whole flashback thing being black and white, because if you notice, Spider-Man's red and blue costume was the only thing in color. And that's obviously representative of, you know, choice and good and evil and all that crap.
And if you notice, I was looking for, because you mentioned it last episode, I was looking for the shading of his face. And again, they had the left side of his face. His left side was shaded darker than the other in many scenes when he was still had the symbiote, excuse me. Yeah. So you had that in the whole, and go back to our last episode where we sort of discussed that.
Well, that's, I actually didn't notice that. That's cool. I guess I was too angry to notice that. But
really? What was your first clue? But let's move on to our final talking about point in animation terms. Over this arc, we've seen a transformation of the spider on the front of Spider-Man's black suit. And the legs just gotten larger and larger. So, and to the point to where the spider on the front of the suit in this episode looks a lot like the one on Venom, actually. So what did you think of that, Don?
Well, yeah, like I said when I first saw it, like, this is the reason I like the evolution of the design, because it does make a lot of sense for the suit to first just make it all black. But over time, get up, you know, because obviously at this point, Peter's more taken in by the symbiote. So for it to be pretty much all just the white spider and, like, no other design else, and to, you know, kind of reflect like it was in the comic books, I like that. I really do. And I thought that was brilliant the way they did that. I will say that it's not exactly like the way it should be. It's like the front and back spider should match up design-wise and link over the arms. The back spider is still kind of like the back red spider in his original costume, but it doesn't take away from like what they were doing. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, and then the thing that I liked the most about it was that, you know, it seemed like the legs were basically the legs of the symbiote and were ensnaring Peter in its own web. It was very, or at least that was this, I guess, the symbolic purpose that I felt from that.
Run that by me again. Like, what about his legs?
Okay, the legs of the spider on the suit were wrapping around the suit as if to be symbolic of the symbiote ensnaring Peter in its own web.
I didn't notice that. That could be the way to look into it.
I mean, it's a symbolic way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah. I agree.
I mean, especially when you come to think, you know, Greg Wiseman and how influenced he is by Shakespeare. That's a very Shakespeare type of thing to do.
In what way would you say?
Well, Shakespeare was very much about the sort of the, how should I put it? You know, the first thought that comes to mind, the plant. Okay, I really don't have any other way. It just seems something Shakespeare.
Awesome. Well, let's just roll with that.
Yeah. So let's move on to the story. Let's talk about the dream sequence.
Yeah.
I mean, putting away the, you know, the whole movie reference thing, what did you think of the dream sequence as far as story is concerned?
I thought it was stupid. And, I mean,
For our show. Show's done. Night.
I'm not one of these internet jackoffs who doesn't like to back up his opinions. I thought here's the thing though. He starts out the dream sequence saying, "What's going on? What's happening? Uncle Ben's here. This is the day I get my powers. I got to stop this." And then like after he gets his powers, he just like lives out the whole thing. What happened there? What was going on with that? Like at first he's like I'm omnipotent in the dream, and then he just like lives out the dream. I mean, we know his origin. I think even kids, even though if they've seen the movies, will know his origin. Even if they haven't seen the movies, they can sort of use, you know, the common logic and figure out the origin themselves. I don't think that we need to see his origin just lived out, because that's one thing. But on a more basic level, it doesn't make any sense why his perception changed. And I'm looking up your notes, so I won't get ahead of ourselves. But here's another thing. I know he says, "Oh, the memory of me, you know, I'll never leave you." But to have his memory fight the symbiote, because the symbiote is a separate you know, sentient being. The symbiote is alive. The symbiote has a separate persona. It really does. This whole Uncle Ben thing doesn't make any sense because Uncle Ben, yeah, he's in his memory, but it should be more Peter fighting him than being urged on by the memory of his corpse uncle. So I just thought that was just like, just sort of like really confusing what they were trying to go for and not having anything thought out at all. But what did you think, Thomas?
Pretty much everything you said.
Oh, so you were going to bring that up if I wasn't here, okay.
But, you know, the point is, it has too many plot holes. It just has too many plot holes in it. It's too, again, and I hate to bring up the movie, but it is too verbatim of exactly how the movie did it. There's nothing unique about it. And to be honest, when I wasn't laughing, I was just bored, and I'm like waiting for, okay, get it over with. This is not how I wanted the origin story that I was wanting back in the first episode, if you remember our review for the first episode of the series. That's not how I wanted the origin episode to go.
Well,
I wanted something unique, and they had a chance to do something unique with a story that's been told, let's face it, time and time again. Everybody knows the origin story, and they just settled for being lazy, as you said.
Yeah, that's a pretty harsh way to go about it, but at the same time, it's just appropriate. And this, I remember in the podcast saying that Josh Keaton, oh, I should say the Spider-Man Crawlspace podcast, that Josh Keaton said that this was his favorite episode of the season. And I can understand why it would be a favorite amongst people, because it forces Peter Parker to confront with his origin and why he's doing what he's doing. It forces a character to reflect upon themselves and to come up with a new decision and a new epiphany about themselves, and that's deep stuff. Where it fails at is, however, is showing the viewer, something new about them, so we can go, ah, along with Peter. We know that he's the good guy. We know that, you know, he can't give into the symbiote because the symbiote is selfish and self-indulgent, and Peter, if anything, is least of all that. So when you're showing, you know, oh, Peter's actually not a good guy, he has, I'm trying to save the worst for last, but...
Go ahead and say it.
Okay, moving on to the point number two. The whole friendship thing, this is getting cut out, was... It was absolute...
Oh, I'm keeping this in here.
Okay, seriously, I'm not playing around here. You're telling me that, and I said this in the review, if you don't want me to yell in your phones, then just read that. Spider-Man was co-created by Steve Ditko. And Steve Ditko is a mean cuss. He's an objectivist. He left Marvel because he couldn't get on with Stan Lee, and that's basically because he's a loner. Spider-Man is a loner. And as many supporting characters and friends as Peter Parker may have, that's not going to hold him up to you know, fight a friggin' alien. I'm sorry. Oh, he has so many friends. Let's count those friends. J. Jonah Jameson. How much of a friend is he? He's his boss. Yeah, he tried to help Peter when he heard his aunt was sick, but Peter didn't know that. Who else? Who else did he count among? Oh, Black Cat. Oh, the person who stole from him. That's wonderful.
Okay. You have to count her as a friend because she gave him a happy ending.
Can you rephrase that?
Nope. I will die.
I'm looking at the, while it was cool, Amazing Spider-Man 100 homage on the screen cap. You have Flash, Liz, Martha Connors, Gwen, Aunt May, MJ, Harry, John Jameson, Hobie Brown. Has Hobie Brown done anything towards Peter Parker this entire season? The answer is no. Glory Grant, what has she done? Oh, go out with this best friend. Yeah, she's a great friend of Peter. Dr. Connors? Okay, I'll count that, but just some of this is just so ridiculous. Oh, you have Sally friggin' Avril. Like, if you need me to spell it out for you, these aren't his friends. These are the supporting characters that they casted for voice actors in the show. That's being lazy. That's not his friends. Those are the rest of the cast. They just need to fill out space and just add everybody. If you remember in the flashback sequence, you know what some of those flashbacks were? Uncle Ben! Uncle Ben is dead! One of the screencasts was him looking at a picture of Uncle Ben. Well, what a friend the picture is! Wow, yeah, what tough times that picture brought him through. Are you kidding me? Oh, this just makes me sick.
See, this is why I'm here, people. I'm here to direct the guided cruise missile known as Donna Mark, where I need to go. And while he goes back and does the damage, I'm back here, not responsible. I can't be held accountable.
But you know, I'm right. I'm not making this up out of my This is absolutely correct. Go back and look.
I understand what you're saying, you know. But, you know, they're the supporting cast, but as we'll see in, you know, later episodes, there is a friendship with Glory Grant. I mean, he didn't date her, but there is a friendship there. There's
what
a
that's the next season. That's not this episode. So it's irrelevant.
Don, okay, Don. You said your piece. Let me say mine. Okay. He obviously has some type the problem is we've not seen these friendships. You know, he obviously has some type of friendship with Randy, being that of course his father works for the Daily Bugle, and they have, and you know, his father's also very much friends with Peter in the sense that he's, you know, usually the one after John Jonah Jameson, you know, yells at him, you know, comforting him afterwards. You know, but I do agree they really should have just had it been Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy, maybe Kurt Connors because of how, you know, Kurt Connors has been influential to him, Aunt May, maybe Black Cat, because, you know, yeah, they're one episode, but they had a very cool relationship. Liz Allen, and that maybe should have been it.
Just one more. They have Norman Osborn in this.
Okay, time out. Well, we don't know Norman is Green Goblin. That hasn't been a spoiler alert. That hasn't been revealed yet, and it won't be revealed to the end of the second season. For everything that's happened, he has been nice to Peter. He's always been complimenting Peter. He's always been, when they unmasked Harry in the Green Goblin outfit, you know, he was willing to sacrifice himself and say, oh, it was me, in order to save his son. So Peter does look up to him, so it would make sense in this continuity that, yeah, he would see him as, if not a friend, as someone he looks up to.
Okay.
I mean, does that at least make sense?
Well, that makes sense. You know, it makes sense. It's logical. I don't like it, but it is logical. But that doesn't, you know, like that's not my only card in the deck. That's just I can't
obviously
Hobie Brown in here.
But then again, you're not playing with a full deck. We already knew that. But when I had the point,
real cute.
When I had the point about talking about the relationship between Peter and his friends and how it was influenced the suit, I was more talking about that, you know, one scene.
In the beginning?
Yeah, in the beginning, where, you know, they were trying to, you know, because they were worried about him and Aunt May, and because of, you know, being in control of the suit at that point in time, how he acted towards them. And I thought that was very poignant. I mean, the whole episode wasn't the dream sequence. It was a large part of it, but there was also more before that I think was really good, in fact.
I will say that the stuff outside of the dream sequence was better than the dream sequence. Well, let me say something less obvious. The stuff outside the dream sequence was really good. Or at least I liked it.
Okay. I mean, that was a poignant part for, you know, the thing we were just talking about. You know, it was Liz Allen. You know, you would find out later, even Sally was worried about him. How much, we don't know, but we all heard with that she was even worried about him, and that's when you know it's serious. When the Lindsay Lohan look-alike mean girl is worried about you, So,
well, going back real quick, there were two like cutscene montages. The first one was a friends thing. The second one was Spider-Man saving everybody.
Yeah,
I don't really have a problem with that overall, but if you notice, it always goes to Spider-Man either catching someone or swinging by and, you know, grabbing someone out of harm's way. This is just funny. Did you notice that they cut to Harry Osborn blacking out and falling into Spider-Man's arms? As if Spider-Man saved him somehow. Look at all you done, the good you've done. You were even there when Harry Osborn, like, you know, doubled over. You were able to catch him as he fell. that's just goofy.
Yeah. But I have to agree. Let's move on to talking point number three so we can try to edge away from the now damaged city that is Spectacular Webs, done by damaged by Donna Hulk, and let's talk about the influence of MJ on Gwen, because you see a very poignant scene that it's going to be very influential to the romance that's going to start to happen in season 2 where Gwen does technically go after Peter to an extent. I mean, not often, but there are poignant episodes where it does show her going after her, or excuse me, after him.
Well, I would say that the relationship between the two of them is heated up a bit. Because you don't want to say that she went after him because she ends up with Harry. But I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, but I also think it shows exactly what Greg Wiseman, and this is why I want to talk about it, because we just had our interview with Greg Wiseman, and some of the things he said about MJ, I think this scene perfectly shows that, yeah, if the series had continued the way Greg Wiseman had continued it, it would have been no question that at the end of the series, Peter would have been with Mary Jane. Because
did you say that? I thought he talked about he needed a reason why Gwen's fate would have an effect on Mary Jane.
Yeah, on Mary Jane and on Peter and how... And really, because again, he was correct in basically saying that it was Gwen's fate that is the reason... or a big reason why MJ and Peter were finally able to get together. They were able to grow up. You know, MJ realized that at some point the party was going to end. You know, in turn, she ended up with Peter and helped him understand to move on past Gwen. And a whole lot of other things that we could get into, but we'd be here, for the next 24 hours. But I think it's very poignant that it did show what MJ's character was going to be in this series and how important it was going to be to both Peter and Gwen, in the sense that I don't want to say she was going to be a cheerleader, but maybe it did show her feelings a little bit, how much she cared for both of them and the fact that she was trying to get them together.
I think she was more kind of like towards, because Mary Jane, I said before, she's like the cool kid. She doesn't really pick favorites. She's just nice to whoever. And, you know, she's all Gwen.
Yeah, but she's obviously nicer a lot more to both, especially Peter and to Gwen. And she does do a lot in the series to try to get them together.
I don't really think she... I'm not going to say she doesn't care, because obviously she does in next season, but I think her trying to get... She's more on Gwen's side than Peter's side.
Yeah, I mean, but I would like to sit there and say that part of the reason is she likes Peter, but she doesn't feel like she's right for him, so she wants to make sure he gets with somebody who is right with him. But we have no evidence of that, so I can't say.
No, you don't have no evidence of that.
at least not yet.
Right?
So let's move on to our fourth talking point. Let's talk about how scary it was that Flash made sense. Were you scared?
No, I thought it was cool. Because I always like the Flash Thompson character. You know, as kind of obnoxious and bullying as he can be, he's always a good guy. So when the one thing that Peter, he kind of, you know, bugs on Peter because Peter bugs him or whatever. But it really got under his skin when Peter was acting very jerkish towards the girls, and so you could tell that he was going to do something about that. And that's very much indicative of his character. So I thought that was cool. But how were you scared about it, Thomas?
Well, on the joke side, I was very scared. I mean, like I said, I was hiding under the couch because, I mean, the dumb jock is making sense to the smart nerd. I mean, we should be scared at that point. I think that's the first sign of the apocalypse. But on the non-joking side, you're absolutely right. It is a thing of that, you know, he is a good guy. And so for him to make sense, being that he is actually one of Peter's oldest friends, especially since, as we'll learn in Season 2, it's Peter who gave Flash his nickname, and it wasn't because he ran fast.
nor was it what was written in the recent Spider-Man comics.
but being that he's our oldest friend, you know, it does stand to make sense that he would be one of the people that could help people, you know. And really, that's what it was. Oh my god, Flash made sense. I should be scared and start thinking poignantly. I mean, that's basically how it went in the episode. Flash made sense, and Peter got scared that Flash made sense.
Well, Flash is awesome, so. Or at least I really like him, so.
Okay, our final talking point is, let's talk about, at the end of the episode, Eddie merges with the Symbionite.
Try again. There you go. You go first.
Well, I mean, again, because I hadn't read the comics and I didn't see how, I haven't read how Eddie got the Venom in, or the symbiote in the original comics, all I have to go by is the movie from my experience. So, I felt it was, you know, again, it felt like it fit considering the continuity that they set up with the symbiote feeding off of anger and all the anger in Eddie. You know, and they really did build up to that.
This whole thing with Eddie. I really need to get on editing that Wiseman interview because I need to listen to that again. Because he does, I do bring up my confusion with the Eddie Brock character in this show, and Wiseman does kind of lay it out on the line straight. But like watching this episode again, I still have some trepidations. Like the whole, you know, hey bro, you cost me my job. How exactly did Peter? And this leading up to like at the end, so like, I'm not off topic. I mean, but like, you know, how is Peter responsible for that? Oh, because the Connors lost something. So when he, I just thought it was like really really rushed personally, the whole absorption thing. I understand that the symbiote fed on his hate. That's why it was able to break out of the thing. But what I like from and the movie version was a little more than the comics version in that. It was like Eddie Brock was totally freaked out when the symbiote came after him, and it was only after it got inside his bloodstream where he accepted it. I kind of like the whole I'm frightened as all can be when this thing gets on me, and then after he's Venom, he like accepts it. So the symbiote kind of talking to him and that distorted Ben Diskin voice, which I kind of liked also. Ben Diskin's a good actor, but I thought it was a little too rushed, a little too, I don't want to say contrived, but, I thought I could do a little better. I thought that his voice acting was great. I liked how it was revealed that Spider-Man was Peter Parker, but it was basically like, oh, I see, it almost seemed like the symbiote needed anybody to get out, and it just took Eddie Brock just by happenstance. Not that Eddie Brock had specific rage, but that it was like, oh, this guy will do well. It kind of came off that way to me. So I wish it was a little. They had a little more time to expand upon it, but I mean, I guess they could have done worse.
I think the last thing I'll say about it is I did find it funny that once he got Venom and got the memories of Venom, you know, it was part of the symbiote. That is like, oh, we don't have two enemies; we have one enemy, Peter, Spider-Man. I'm sorry. This rope.
I know where you're going with this.
Okay,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bleep this. When you hear this, so you're going to hear a bleep in a second, so please excuse my language, but no!
My ears. I can't take the beeping.
Really? 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 Now you finally figure it out, you dumb...
I don't think that Eddie had any impetus to think that Peter was Spider-Man. Yeah, he takes the pictures and stuff, but I mean, he has as much a chance of figuring out as everybody else does. I don't really see how he should have known he was Spider-Man. I don't know.
Again, it goes back to that, you know, the thing that we were talking about in the last episode. Greg Weisman talked about in the interview, though I can't remember what he talked about Venom in the episode. I can't bring it up. But it is that point of whether he's, you know, whether they were brothers, or, you know, it was just something that came out of high school. You know, because if you, again, it depends on how much you take Eddie's word during that motorcycle scene in the last episode. If you take him for his word, then they grew up very much very close friends because of the airplane accident, and very much like brothers. Right. So, for me, it is that thing of, if they were that close, he should know Peter better and be able to put two and two. I'm like, Peter would, you know, call the police. He's a good guy. You know, he wouldn't do these horrible things that I'm accusing him of, and he takes pictures of Spider-Man. Maybe he is Spider-Man. You know, he's never around when we see Spider-Man. You know, there are certain common sense things that should be coming to mind, and I understand it could be determined that, you know, the anger doesn't allow common sense to enter his mind. Not that there seems like there is any common sense a lot of the time in Eddie Brock's mind, but that's besides the point. But, you know, To me, it just seems like he should have figured it out a while ago. The clues were there.
Well, that's certainly fair. You're not going to hear me argue with you on that. That's certainly fair, especially if they, you know, were close friends. Again, I really need to listen to that interview again to be reminded specifically of what Mr. Wiseman said. Because the Peel the Curtain Back, folks, we recorded that like a week ago today. And
as of when we record this, not when you get this. You're getting this in August.
As of this recording, we had recorded the Wiseman interview a week of this recording, since this recording.
Which was July 30th.
Right, right. So do the math on there. But I really need to listen again just so I can like be completely 100% safe in this characterization. And some things are better. Some things I still question. And I hope I listen to it before we record the next episode where you know he's Venom. Spoilers. Well, we already said that.
You will.
So yeah, I hope it'll all be good by the next episode.
Okay, so let's move on to one of our things. Favorite lines.
I had one because I had one and I thought Peter's kind of like smarmy line. I must say I ran on this episode a lot. I think my favorite part about this was Josh Keaton's voice acting because like when he's getting bit by the spider he's like no, he sounds so desperate and scared and like this whole episode I thought he did because obviously he's the symbiote, the Peter Parker voice part of the symbiote, and he's really. He really is very excellent in the role, and I don't ever want to shortchange his performance for the overall quality of the episode. I mean, just as I think that Grace Wiseman is on average a very good writer, I just didn't care for this episode. I think Josh Keaton turns out a heck of a performance. So my favorite line was from him when he said, we just want to help Pete. He's like, help. That's a good one. Yeah, how exactly do you plan on helping? Do my homework and lower my GPA? I was kind of like, oh, no! I thought that was a well-said line.
Well, I agree. You know, his voice performance was very... I'll get to that in a second, though. But my favorite line, really, is the one comedic line. Well, there was another one, but the one that I only remember was, that's what you're in for, Rumi? Sure you don't want to vacate?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much, like, really the only, like, Spider-Man comedic moment in the entire episode. Final rating.
You go first.
No, you go first, because I have to go last.
You have to go last?
Yes.
2. And I don't even want to go more into why.
Yeah. Wow, I was suspicious on who would be higher. I guess I'm going to be higher. I'm giving it a 2.5, and really the 0.5 is based off of Josh Keaton's voice acting. I mean, Greg Weisman's a great writer, it is a great series, but this episode just bore me. When I wasn't laughing my ass off at all of the movie references, you know, especially the last half, it just bore me. The first part was good, but it just feels like half an episode. Really, that's all it does. And you just have this boring origin story that, you know, had so much potential and nothing was done with it. You know, I would have given it a 1.5, but Josh Keaton's voice acting was just that good that it raised it up one whole point. So a 2.5 for me.
And it's really funny because I actually, when I first saw this episode, I really, really liked it. Then I applied logic to it, and then I had to review it. And
oh, that pesky logic! Always ruining things for us.
Logic and science! But that was just for me. But I mean, I know a lot of people do like this episode. If anybody like disagrees with us thoroughly, if they think they can like outwit us, if they just like want to yell at us, feel free to. I mean, even if Josh Keaton or Greg Wiseman are listening, perish forbid. But if they like take issue with what we're saying, please contact us, you know, by that email or iTunes reviews and just let us know what you think because... I mean, we're not so close-minded that we're not open to discussing it like adults.
Yeah.
So please do that.
And mind you, I did discuss this episode like an adult.
Well, yeah. We tried to. Yeah.
That's our rating. But before we get on to our usual plugs and other indie things, as we were doing this podcast, we actually got a message on Skype from one of our avid listeners who told us, hey, I left you a question in the forum space. So we are actually going to answer that question right now. You ready, Don?
Oh, I'm ready.
It's from our usual friend, SpiderPool279. He says, just, though he spells just J-S-U-T, just listen to episode 11, so what's up? Are you guys going to see the Sorcerer Apprentice? And Thomas, why do you want to mention bleeping stuff? You did it again, BTW. Because it's just a warning. And no, I'm not going to tell you what Donovan said that I bleeped out.
Or what you said when you bleeped out.
Yep.
No. Nope. So you're gonna see? Are you gonna see that Sorcerer's Apprentice?
I might. It depends on how much money I have. If anybody would like, yeah. But if anybody would like to donate so I can have a movie experience, please donate to. No, it looks like a really good movie. I do believe that The Apprentice is the same guy who voices the main character in How to Train Your Dragon, if I'm not mistaken.
I have no earthly idea.
Oh, it did. How to Train Your Dragon did make IGN's top 25 greatest animated movies of all time. I kid you not. Apparently it was that good.
Well, I'm not seeing that movie, and I don't know the guy's voice acting credit.
Well, I do feel that all was right in the world, because at the end of that top 25, they had Beauty and the Beast still ranked number one, as it should be. Because no CGI movie ever can compete with the soul of a 2D masterpiece that is Beauty and the Beast, or Hayao Miyazaki's Spirited Away. But that's just my...
Or Heavy Metal.
And that's just my opinion, and, you know, it's okay. You guys can be wrong at some things. we have other podcasts. Don, you want to plug yours first?
All right. Yes. Amazing Spider-Man Classics with John M. Wilson and Bertone. Clone Saga Chronicles with Zach, Bertone, Gerard, and Brandon, and Jason. And my DeviantArt page, please check out at DonMarkin@DeviantArt.com.
All right. Of course, I have my Thomas's Prerogative every Monday, except for this past week. I just actually released it today. I was so backed up on podcast editing that I had to push it back 2 days. But actually, I just, as of this recording, released it this Wednesday, which is June 7th. July 7th. But, you know, Thomas's Prerogative every Monday. Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which I do with my friend Jesse Garrett. We just recorded an episode where we had a guest host in my friend Lucid Dream. I am part of the Capes and Feathers podcast. That's along with our good friend Spidey Girl, Stella Spidey Girl from Spider-Man Crawl Space, Logan Daniels, Jesse Garrett, Robert Bell, and Walter Bowman. And we will hopefully be recording our second episode soon. And as I say this next podcast, I'm sure we will have no comments from the Peanut Gallery. My final podcast is the Hexcast, a podcast where me and my friend Lori Thomas review every issue of Jim Ballant's Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose. We, of course, plug our friends. We plug, you know, Brad Douglas in the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box. Also, Michael Bailey's Crisis to Crisis and Tales from the JSA. The Shaft podcast of my friends Chris and Gene. Clone Saga Chronicles done by our friends Bertone and Spidey Dude. The Batgirl Chronicles podcast done by a good friend Stella Spider-Girl. Kaiju Cast done by my friend good friend Kyle Yost. The Nostalgia Critic is a good podcast you listen to, the 2-in-1 Showcase. And of course, our good friends Scott H. Gardner and Chris Honeywell and their 2-2 Freaks podcast, and Thomas DJ and all of his podcasts, which names are escaping me. So that's it for this episode. Don, do you want to tell them where they can find the show and its forums?
Well, actually, are the forums still up? Because we don't want to send them to a graveyard. Normally, you can go to thecomicforums.com and scroll down and see Spectator Web's podcast. Check there to see if it still works. Also, you can go to, you know...
It does.
Oh, does it? Okay, cool.
Yeah. They finally got all their upgrading done, yeah.
I see. Gotcha. Also, it is Spectacular Waves Podcast at podmatic.com to download and leave comments.
And you can leave emails at the show by sending them to spectacularwebs@yahoo.com. And remember, we're on iTunes, so again, leave those iTunes reviews. So that's it for this spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs Podcast. Next week, or should I say next month, excuse me, season finale, folks, and we will have a special guest, a very good friend who's been very, very proactive in cheering us on, and he will be on for the final episode of the final season. So until next time, Spider-Man fans, stay spectacular. Living on the edge, body cross, spinning webs, swinging from the highest ledge, he could leap above our head. Looking up with no surprise, arriving in the speed of time. Spectacular, spectacular, Spider-Man. Spectacular, spectacular, Spider-Man. Spectacular.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No! Can I get your ship out?
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fans.
F*** Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.